Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Jennifer Law, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Welcome to Venus Rising. I'm really excited about our guest here with us today, Matt Doran. It's really cool. Matt Doran is an aerospace engineer. I don't think we've had an aerospace engineer with us on Venus Rising. But he's not here today to talk about aerospace engineering. He's here today to talk about his story about being a donor-conceived human being and his work in the space of advocacy for the rights of those who are donor-conceived. He's founder of the free social network DonorChildren.com, so I hope you all visit that website. He's the father of four and married to his high school sweetheart, and he found his father, biological father, for those who might be a little bit confused already, through DNA testing, and he has a very close relationship with him now. His project, Donor Children, helps connect people to the community of other donor-conceived families and adults and children, offering them support, offering them family matching tools, and creating a first demographic in history organizing donor-conceived people. He also helps cast TV shows, and he's involved in contributing to the academic research body of information, which is really important in the space. So welcome, Matt. It's really good to have you on Venus Rising.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. I know your sister, Katie, so I know her probably better than I know you.
Yeah, you've met her, right?
Yeah, I've met her. She's actually a monthly supporter to my work. So.
Oh, cool. I did not know that.
I know. Shout out for those who...
She's pretty awesome.
Yeah, she's great. She's newly married. Yep. Anyway, so Matt, I want you to tell your story as much as you are at liberty to tell. I know a lot of donor-conceived people are, kind of gagged and have to be more quiet, but I think you're able to be out of the closet on your story a bit more.
Yeah, I'm pretty open about my story, and it's cost me because, my family relationships have suffered, but it's not so much something I internalize as something that's my fault. I'm just trying to find out who I am and figure out what my place is on this earth and where I come from, and that's not a crime to want to know more about yourself. And part of that comes from knowing where you come from through your biological family and your heritage and everything that comes with that. So I found out I was donor conceived. It was June 6, 2012. I was 25 years old. I was having my first child, and we went to the ultrasound at the OBGYN office, and I saw my daughter on the computer screen on an ultrasound, and it woke up something in me that I had sort of repressed, I think. From my childhood, I had been asking questions internally that I didn't even understand why I was asking these questions since I was about 12 years old. I guess that's because I was entering puberty and the adolescent years, and you start to question during those developmental years who you are, and you start to look for identification in things like your father. And father that I was raised by, I had a struggle identifying with, and on many different levels. And we just didn't click. We'd spend time together. We went through the ropes, we learned how to scuba dive together. I had a pretty stereotypical childhood. He provided in my earlier years, but in my later adolescence, he sort of fell off the wagon on terms of being able to provide or being a good provider. So I think I had some resentment towards him from that, and I didn't understand what was going on with them. So I came from like a real low income situation out of high school into college. I didn't know like what I wanted to do in college. I was kind of lost. I was undeclared. And I ended up choosing aerospace engineering, which is a pretty random and crazy thing to pick because it's not easy. It's very difficult. And I kept surprising myself with my abilities, also my interests. I've always been interested in aviation, been good at math. I just followed those little voices. Entering my career, I kind of had some self, I was a little self-conscious about being an engineer, because nobody in my family had been an engineer. I'll get into, more of the details on the back end, on my backstory. But basically, I found my biological family through DNA testing, and five generations of my family has worked in aviation and Boeing and different forms of like A&P mechanic or engineer. My grandfather's grandfather and great grandfather were both engineers. My dad's a doctor. It really gave me like a sense of, oh, I'm actually doing something I was sort of made to do, and I didn't feel so weird anymore. Gave me a lot of confidence in my job that I didn't have prior to that.
I'm curious, you say growing up you had all these kind of internal questions. What were those questions?
So when I was around 12 years old, you know, you're not a man, so maybe you have these womanly experiences, but when you're a boy growing up, boys are more visual in terms of identification, I think. And I was in the locker room at the YMCA with my, I call him my stepdad now, Bill, and his two brothers and his dad in Missouri, where I'm from, and they're all butt naked, and I'm wearing a swimsuit because I'm shy and I'm 12 years old. And to be completely frank, we had different man parts. They all looked similar, and I didn't. And I was like, "That's kind of weird. Why do I look different?" That was one of my first flashbulb memories. And then beyond that, the way we process things, the way we think, our interests, our work ethics, our intelligence. I think I'm smarter than he is, and we just can't connect at an intellectual level. Beyond that, let me think. So growing up, we'd spend most of our holidays at his family in Missouri and not my mom's side for other reasons that I won't get into for my mom's family. It was always like I liked hanging out with his family, but they had money and we had fun, but I didn't feel like I belonged there. There was something I just didn't connect with his family. I didn't feel like, but I'd spend 2 hours a year with my mom's side a fraction of the time, and I instantly felt connected to my mom's siblings and nieces and nephews, who are my cousins.
And just for the audience's sake, your mom is your biological genetic mother.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So,
and she was artificially inseminated by Dr. William J. Cameron in Kansas City, Missouri, or Kansas, KUMC, KU Med, Jayhawks, in 1986. I was born in December of 86.
And what was the infertility issue with your dad? Do you know what that was?
Bill was, he had testicular cancer at the age of 12, and I was told sort of a white lie, I guess, growing up, that he had still had one testicle, and they were able to go have fertility help, and that's how I came into the world. So I was told this story, and then at the end of the story, Bill would always talk about my mom was getting emotionally exhausted by going, because she started in 84, had a couple miscarriages, and then had me in 86. And the story went that she was going to, she couldn't do it anymore. She was just tired and emotionally spent. And he had this sort of fantasized idea that God had conceived me at that moment in time, and he would start crying. And it always felt a little odd to me, like why it was so emotional and why it was like a little fantasized, and I didn't quite understand the situation. It left me feeling like I didn't have the full story. And that feeling combined with all my other identification questions or feelings added up to me asking him that day at the ultrasound at the age of 25, is there something you're not telling me? Is there something about my conception you're not telling me?
So this is fast forward to you're finding out about the birth of your upcoming child.
Right.
And you asked Bill then, just point blank.
Point blank. I got home. We were living in Colorado, and we got home to our apartment we were renting, and I was on the balcony on the second floor, and I went out there to have some quiet, and I called him, and I asked him, and I said, is there something you're not telling me? I feel like you've always told me this story my whole life, but you're leaving something out. And that's when he finally told me that he's not my biological father. And it was kind of an out-of-body experience. I was in shock, but at the same time, my whole life made sense all at the same moment. And my first question was, do you know who he is? And Bill said, no, he was anonymous. And then my second question was, does my sister Katie know? And he said, nope, she doesn't know. Don't tell her. And I said, well, I'm still in shock, but I was like, well, now I've always been a pretty good, like, son. I've tried to be honoring and and everything. But I said, well, this isn't my secret, and I will give you till Thanksgiving. So I gave them 6 months to tell, and they waited till Thanksgiving Day to tell my sister.
Wow. I love in our film Anonymous Father's Day when Barry Stevens says secrets, they're like landmines. You know, and I can just imagine this moment when this sort of bomb blew up in your world. And then you set the ticking bomb, giving them the 6 month countdown, knowing that another bomb is going to like land in Katie's lap. And like, what? How did your mom respond to all this now you know? And did she try to console you? Did she try to play down?
Oh, boy. Well, my mom, she's like queen of denial. She's kind of, her dad left her mom when she was in high school for another woman at work. And they never resolved this family, this affair, this adultery. And I think that's why we didn't spend much time with her side of the family. And also Bill, I think, favors his family. He's kind of controlling. And looking back as a 33, almost 33-year-old now, I see it more clearly. My mom, she's never been very supportive of me. She told me once that she wishes I never knew. She and Bill started drinking a lot and have become pretty abusive emotionally, and even Bill physically has abused me. I've had some pretty intense incidences with them that I no longer talk to them pretty much. And our relationship is pretty much limited to seeing them in public with the kids once in a while.
Wow.
I can't go to their house anymore. It's not a good relationship. And it's not because I haven't tried. I've moved my family back to Florida to be close to them along with my in-laws. And I've given them a lot of chances, but they just don't seem to see anything beyond. Like growing up, I always felt like I was a problem and they didn't understand me. And it was interesting because after we had our first child, they sent me a book in the mail from the 1980s that they clearly had bought and read trying to parent me, was how to raise a strong-willed child. And I just threw it in the trash because I was like, I don't need this crap. You know, I know who my kid is. My kid is me and my wife. And yeah, I was right. I mean, parenting for me is so easy. And my kids and I are so close. And yeah, I don't have any of those issues. So I've always felt like they've always been trying to change me as a person to make me what they want, which isn't a good way to come into the world. Like, you shouldn't bring people into the world to make them something that they're not, to satisfy you in some way.
Yeah.
So.
And were you there when they told your sister, or?
No, I wasn't. I was in Colorado, and I think she went back for Thanksgiving, and they dropped it on her on Thanksgiving Day.
And then so, how did you hear that she had been told? Did she contact you or?
Yeah, I think she maybe called me. I don't remember exactly. Her initial reaction was to cry. She was devastated. And then she doesn't remember this, but they came to visit us in Colorado for Christmas. And Bill, we're at my dining table in Colorado, and Bill brings it up and tells our half-brother Brian, who's from my mom's first marriage, that Katie and I are not his biological children. And so that was really awkward because I'm in my own house on another holiday, and it's just kind of getting overshadowed by this more secrets, you know, and now having to tell my brother. It was really difficult. I had to leave the room. I was so upset. And because Bill said something like, oh, but it's okay, you know, it doesn't change anything. And I think that's what upset me. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't want him speaking for me, he, you know. So my sister, though, she actually at one point said on that trip that if she couldn't have children, that she would maybe consider a third party, like a sperm donor or egg donor or whatever. And I got kind of upset with her about that. So we didn't have like a good interaction about it in the beginning. And she's always kind of processed slower. And I've always been a quick processor. And I went on a journey to find our biological family, and she didn't want to be part of it. She's told me, if you find any family, don't tell me. So then I found our dad, and she later found out through texting with me that, oh yeah, I had found him, and she got mad at me. She's like, why haven't you told me? I'm like, you told me not to tell you. So then ever since that moment that I sent her a picture of our dad, she has completely changed. There was something about seeing her father that shifted something in her.
Wow.
And now she's an advocate, and that's what she does every day. And she supports CBC, and she's spoken in all kinds of different venues, including the United Nations.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay. Yeah, so that's great. Let's shift to your work in the advocacy space. And you know, if you had a magic wand, you know, what would you wish for, and what would you hope you could change in this whole baby making third party conception world?
Oh man. Well,
I mean, are you a regulator? Are you like open and honest? Are you the take money out of it?
Most of the time I hear donor conceived people say we should just take baby steps and regulations and piggyback on those regulations. And I get that may be more effective and strategic, but I always try to be more of an advocate for what I really believe and not just what I think I should do, because other people won't buy into what I think. But I think it should be banned. I think the whole practice should be banned. I view third-party reproduction as human trafficking. It's legalized human trafficking, and money it's a huge multi-billion dollar industry, and you're disenfranchising children from their biological roots so that you can have a baby. As it's more like purchasing an object, and you're denying this child now the right to what I believe are their human rights to their natural heritage. And I believe the United Nations actually agrees with that. They define human trafficking to something to that effect. It would be good maybe to look that up.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about recruitment and coercion. And when you think about how egg and sperm donors and surrogate mothers are recruited with these heavily monetized advertisements, I agree that it is a violation of the rights of human beings, you know, to be created in these commercial contracts. You know.
Right.
Children
are. Yeah, I'm reading it right now. It's the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, receipt of persons by improper means, such as force, abduction, fraud, or coercion for an improper purpose. So basically, you're exploiting somebody. And I've always related to the being donor conceived, it often feels like abduction. I feel like there's this Stockholm syndrome-like existence where, like, I feel like I need to care about my mom and Bill to the extent that I put myself in harm's way, you know? Or I see a lot of donor conceived people put themselves last, but they elevate their social parents, the ones who raised them, and they'll elevate the biological parent, the sperm egg donor. Even when they're contacting their biological parent, when they find him, I often hear donor conceived people say, I'm just looking for, you know, a couple photos and some medical history. I don't want to intrude on your life. I don't want anything else from you. And I often ask them, do you think that maybe they want to know you? Maybe they want a relationship, and now you're making them feel like all you want from them is a picture. Because my dad and I are so close now, we talk every day on the phone, and he tells me you're either in or you're out, and he doesn't want to put himself emotionally in a vulnerable position with somebody like another offspring who's not willing to get to know him, because he's a human being too. There's like a lot of these beliefs about sperm donors that they don't want to know the children and that they don't want to be found. And I don't believe that is true.
Do you know how many children he has out there because of his sperm donation way back when?
So part of my story in finding him, I uncovered a hard copy video from 1992 where they rumored on the hard copy that he could have over 500 children. And so for a few years, I believed that was my reality. And actually was part of why I left the Midwest and moved back to Florida, because I felt like my siblings were everywhere. Like, people were telling me I looked familiar, and it was creeping me out. So I, for my own that was one of the reasons. But now that I know him and I talk to him every day, and he tells me that that whole hard copy was a scandal made for TV, and they like soundbited him, and you know, that show's not on the air anymore. And if you look at it, it is kind of a shock and awe show. I just recently DNA matched a half brother this year. And you would think if I had hundreds of siblings, I would have at least a dozen or two siblings on these DNA sites. I'm on every DNA site out there on like 7 different databases. And I only have one aside from my sister, Katie. He and I matched this year and we have the exact same birthday. I'm seven hours older. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
I'm going to his wedding next week, actually.
Wow. So tell us about DonorChildren.com. What are your goals? Yes. What are your aims? Have you been successful since you've launched?
Yeah. It's been exciting. I just kind of started it like you started your CBC network, just wanting to make a difference. I started it in December of 2013. Yeah, it's grown. We have over 3,000 members. It's not as big as I would like it to be. I see people matching on a regular basis, and I've been told by many people that they found their siblings through the website, and they've sent me donation money just because they're so grateful. I don't charge people anything, and I make some money from the DNA test commissions, which you can buy them through our website, and we get a little commission, so that helps pay for our website.
Are there mostly people in America that are on your site?
It's a global website. And I've also helped cast some TV shows and academic researchers join. And if you're an advocate, or an activist, if you're a friend of a donor-conceived person, if you're a media representative, if you're a professor, you don't have to be donor-conceived to join it. You can be in all these other categories. Because the point of the website is not just to help donor-conceived people match family, but it's also to create a demographic. That's what I'm trying to do.
So I could join.
You could join for sure.
Well, yeah. I'll do that as soon as we're done chatting in a few
and then
minutes.
I'll join.
DonorChildren.com, people.
That's right. And if you join, you can say you want to interview somebody who's from a frozen embryo. So you have a sperm and an egg donated or sold transactionally, you know, and they have, because there's people on my website where, you know, mom joins and her child came from two random people, and they're both, and they put them together in a lab and put them in her womb. And then she wants me to help find both of these people. I mean, it's crazy the situations out there. And I've also had people join who used IVF to make a baby, but then they had leftover embryos and the clinic coerced them. They don't allow them to be known. They said, if you want to preserve these embryos, you need to be anonymous. Otherwise, we're going to destroy the embryos. And because they believed that those embryos were living human beings, they didn't want to destroy them. So they were coerced by the clinic to give them away anonymously. So now they're on my website trying to be available. It's heartbreaking, you know, these people, what situations they're in, but they put themselves in those situations.
Yeah. But, wow. And do you have also people created through egg donation on your site?
Those are
that demographic is still kind of young, unlike sperm donation, which has been around for a long, long, long time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we have egg donors and sperm donors that are there trying to find their offspring. And I have one group that was a big success early on where three of the moms were on a different website for 7 years and had made no connection with the sperm donor father. They joined on my website, and a week later he joined their group, because it's like Facebook. You make a group for your donor ID or your doctor, your clinic, your university. And he joined within a week, and now there's like 7 or 8 moms, and they're all sharing photos and, you know, living connected. So that's cool to see.
So we're just about out of time. And what are some of the cringeworthy statements that the donor conceived community hates hearing? I've learned some of these myself, you know, but what are some of the things that you hear all the time when people find out your story? What do they say to you that you guys gotta go, don't say that?
Well, it doesn't change anything, or your parents are the ones who raised you, or you should be grateful you were wanted, or what does it matter? Why does it matter? Or quit whining, you know, quit being a victim. These are all the things that we're told. So yeah, try to have compassion and listen to people that, I believe this is a unstudied subject in psychology that I'm hoping to help make an impact on. And one day there will be a greater understanding for the impacts of this industry on society and individuals. And thank you for your work you do. I was texting you the other night watching Made in Boise on PBS, and it was really hard. I was thinking about, should I click on this and hit play? And it's hard when you're donor conceived, because it's like PTSD almost. Like you're going into the area of your mind and your heart that, but I clicked on it and watched it, and yeah, it was pretty wild what things they were saying in that documentary.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. Again, that's even a smaller, younger demographic, all these children that are being born through surrogacy, and oftentimes surrogacy using donor eggs, surrogacy using donor sperm. So they're really going to be ripped apart, if you will, from their
right.
Their origins and their biological families and realities. So anyway, you've given us a lot to think about, and I really appreciate your taking the time to sit down and chat with me today. And for those listening, go to donorchildren.com and support Matt's work, get involved and chip in and help him as he fights for the rights of children and now adults to find their parents, their moms and their dads. It's all we want, right?
Yeah. And if you don't find me as Doran later, I'm going to change my name to Wendler. That's my biological name.
Spell it.
Wendler.
Yeah, so you're taking German. Dad's name.
I am, and I have four kids, so it's going to cost me a couple $1,000s. So these are the kind of things that being donor conceived, you have to deal with.
Yeah, so your wife and you and your four children will all get new names.
Right.
It's like you've been in a witness relocation program and you're finally allowed to come out as who you are.
Yeah, I'm claiming my identity.
Yeah, good.
And not for me, but for all my kids.
Well, great. Well, thank you for what you do, and all the best to your good hard work.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.